Life Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Science writer Mary Roach has taken on some delicate topics with both depth and a large dose of humor in her 7 books. She wrote about human cadavers in Stiff, the afterlife in Spook, and even sexuality in Bonk. But when she comes to speak in Milwaukee next week, her topic will be one that is both steeped in science and bureaucracy.
Grunt takes on the science of the military, from reconstructive surgeries to ways of protecting a soldier's hearing to the military's effort to find an effective shark repellent. More on that in a bit. Mary Roach, though, joins us on the line from her home office in Oakland, California. It's a real pleasure to speak with you.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So your science books in the past have sounded at first blush more science-y, you know, just the idea of them, if we can make up a word. What got you thinking down this road of science, the military, and wartime?
I was reporting a story in India had to do with the world's hottest chili pepper and this crazy chili pepper eating contest. And while I was there, somebody said this chili pepper was weaponized by the Indian Defense Ministry. And I thought, well, that's an interesting element on an otherwise fairly straightforward chili pepper story. So I thought I better go to that lab because it was in the neighboring state of Assam. And I went over there and spoke to these guys who had made this exploding chili pepper powder, kind of like a pepper spray. Anyway, but while I was there, I was just looking around and talking to people. Someone was working on a leech repellent, and it was all very, almost Austin Powers, James Bond-y. It was very surprising just to me, because I'm someone who knows nothing about military science or the military in general, and I had more of a sense of just people, strategy, weapons, guns. I couldn't have imagined that there'd be labs where people are devising leech repellents. And I thought, well, that is an interesting world that I might want to step into and kind of poke around, which is what I do with my life. I step in, I poke around. So that was where it got started. Not a very straightforward answer for you, but there it is.
No, I thought it was a relatively straightforward answer. But, you know, the military isn't always thrilled with people, you know, stepping in and poking around. Was the subject matter for this any more challenging than anything you've done in the past?
I anticipated a lot of problems, a lot of frustration, a lot of unanswered emails or obfuscation or people saying, no, that's not possible. But in fact, it was not that way at all. The military is fairly straightforward. If something's classified, the answer is no, you can't go anywhere near it and we won't tell you anything. But if it's not classified, they're pretty forthcoming. And or at least that was my experience. And they were also fairly helpful in getting me to some obscure and odd places like Djibouti, you know, Camp Lemonnier in Djibouti, which had to happen pretty quickly because the diarrhea chapter, and the person doing the study was leaving in a couple of weeks, and this wonderful Navy public affairs woman said, we're going to make this happen. I mean, we didn't know. A lot of times it was a problem of not knowing whose swim lane is this in, who approves the Mary Roach goes to Djibouti, whose job is it to sign off on that? Is it AFRICOM, CENTCOM, Joint Horn of Africa, hoo-ha? Is it the Pentagon? Is it the guy on the ground in Djibouti? And nobody quite knew what to do with me, and that sometimes slowed things down. But people were surprisingly cooperative and helpful. I mean, I not what I had expected.
Right. We think of the military as this particularly bureaucratic, regimented kind of place, pun intended. One of the remarkable things that I think you've also accomplished is to kind of really humanize the people who populate military labs. Did you look at that once you got into it as kind of a conscious mission to sort of paint these people in more human terms than maybe we often give them credit for?
No, not a conscious effort, but I think that happens naturally any time you step away from this notion of the million, an organization as an entity, as kind of a person. I mean, there is no the military. There's no person who's like, hello, I'm the military, and I'll be your host today. The military is a thousand different organizations, and within each of those, a thousand people. And when you meet, you spend 2 years or 3 years working on a book, you meet dozens of these individuals, and your sense of what the military is kind of softens and also becomes kind of, well, I was going to say softens and yet becomes more focused. That doesn't make any sense at all. Anyway, but But it's more nuanced. Let's say that it's not sort of black and white. Military evil starts war bad. You know, it was okay, but there are these people in there whose job is to kind of make it less lethal and less horrible day by day. And they're good people, and they work hard, and they don't see a lot of glory. And so it wasn't my goal to put them on a pedestal or anything, but it was satisfying to spend time with them and be able to portray them as they are and for what they do.
So it really all comes into focus, I think, when you were in Djibouti. You paint this picture of this special ops guy you spoke with about, you know, the really unpleasant reality of, you know, diarrhea on a mission.
Yes, right. And it was something, you know, when I didn't quite know how to begin that conversation. I had to kind of approach this man who I could tell who he was because he gets to have a beard and no one else on the base does. And he just looks like special operations. He looks the part. He looks central casting. But how to have that conversation. And I expected a certain reaction. And in fact, although initially he was quite wary, as one might be when a stranger's sort of accosts you at dinner and wants to speak about diarrhea. But he, you know, and I said, this is sort of it seems like a silly topic. And he said, it's not. You're welcome to sit down. And we had a very candid talk about something that, you know, it's not, you don't see in the Mark Wahlberg movies, military Navy SEAL movies, you don't see anybody going, I've got food poisoning. I'm not going to make it half an hour. I'm just going to have to go and keep going. I mean, some of the realities just get glossed over. And so it's a very human thing to be in that scenario. And because, you know, a Navy SEAL to me before this book was really, I had this sense of these kind of larger than life, impossibly macho, almost beyond human creatures, because that's what you see in Zero Dark Thirty or whatever the film portrayal is, and so it's very interesting to meet to sit down and have a conversation
right
with one of these people.
Well, and you know, I want to stick with that for just a second because, you know, we've mentioned your trip to Djibouti a couple of times, and I forget what the exact statistic is, but I think you write that a majority of the research into diarrhea and diarrhea-related disease is actually funded by the military in this country. Why is that such a big deal for the military versus anyone else?
Well, because the military, people who are deployed in places like, you know, Yemen or Somalia, or particularly special operations, they're out in a village with no access to safe food. The food may be a goat that's been unrefrigerated for a few days and water that hasn't been treated. And that's how you get food poisoning. And they get it all the time. And obviously, if your major asset is this team of special operations guys, you know, two, three, four guys, and one of them's out, that's a pretty substantial loss of manpower and assets, as they say. So that, you know, that's important. I mean, you know, going back a couple hundred years, I mean, if you go back to some of these wars that were fought, you know, out on a battlefield in hot weather, you've got an open pit latrine, and you've got a mess hall that's not screened. You've got flies, unbelievable numbers of flies that are going back and forth between a latrine and the mess tent, and they're basically on their little hairy legs. They're carrying these pathogens. They're then inoculating the food that isn't refrigerated, that sits in the sun for hours. And now you've got hundreds and hundreds of troops out, sick, some of them dying of dehydration, some of them just out of service, basically. So it's military strategy is what it comes down to. It's personnel. Losing huge numbers of soldiers puts you at a disadvantage. So it's always been something to address if you want to win the war.
Well, in another,
your men have to have solid bowel movement.
Troop movements have to be more regular.
Exactly. There's some kind of motto in there.
I also wanted to ask about one of the more quixotic chapters in this book, the search for an effective shark repellent. How did you stumble on that work? And what was the point of the years of work that was apparently done in this area?
Well, the shark repellent. In World War II, there was suddenly now you had flights going over tropical and temperate waters for the first time. You had boats being sunk in waters where there were sharks, and there was a tremendous amount of shark hysteria. And there were pilots saying, "I don't want to fly over those waters." I mean, they're willing to give their life for the cause, but they didn't want to be eaten by sharks. It was kind of a weird, irrational thing. But the military, the Navy in particular, wanted something that they could put in with the life jackets and the life rafts that would engender some kind of confidence that if there are sharks, we just put this in the water and the sharks will go away. And so they spent a fair amount of time actually trying to find a chemical that would work. In the end, they ended up with sort of a cloud of dark dye, kind of like the way a squid or octopus would protect itself, mask itself with a dark color. But it was really more of a psychological boost than anything. But it was made and it was distributed. But years of research went into the shark repellent. Fairly entertaining research, I have to say. There were all men, and research not only into the repellent, but what effect does urine in the water have, and does a drop of blood, a single drop of blood, does it draw a shark? There were just a lot of shark work going on, but you know, mostly with small, not with great whites, because you can't keep a great white in captivity. So they were with smaller, sometimes sickly sharks that they were doing some of this work on in tanks. Well, and various marine labs.
So you spent a lot of time in medical facilities talking with doctors and with patients who have dealt with some pretty horrendous issues, and yet you managed to write about it with both this humorous and respectful touch. I imagine it cannot always have been easy to have found the humor in some of what you're writing about.
Yes, very much so. That was a concern with this book, because unlike my previous books, this was a more serious subject, and people give their lives to this, and you know, some things are just not funny, but you know, my readers want a little humor, so for that reason, there's the shark repellent chapter and the stink bomb chapter. There's, I put those chapters in partly because they appealed to me and were interesting and funny, and I had the files, but also because I wanted a bit of levity. I wanted things not to be too dark and too heavy. But there were, you know, there certainly were times when I had to get serious. I just think that it wouldn't have been appropriate to write that book and to not have that tone at certain points in the narrative.
Well, and it's not impossible to come out of reading this both, you know, really interested and, you know, asking yourself, given the monumental effort and number of people and amount of time spent figuring out some of these problems, you know, what fraction of that time and effort is spent trying to avoid the war in the first place?
Sure. Yes. Yes. Wouldn't everybody in the book be better off if a little more effort could have been made toward a diplomatic solution? Absolutely. It's kind of like, you know, I used to work at the San Francisco Zoo, and there was a group of people who animal rights people who felt, I think they're called Citizens for a Better Zoo, and they didn't like zoos. And I understand that. I don't like to see animals in cages. But the solution they were advocating was let them go. I'm trying to picture, like, you know, the jaguar, like, wandering around Slope Boulevard. I'm like, is that better? So it's kind of like, yeah, we have this thing, whether it's a military or military or a zoo, and we have it for better or for worse. But we can't get rid of it, or you know, it's not wise to, or we can't change it the way we'd like to. So let's try to make it as humane as we can. It's a better solution, I think. Than, I don't know where I was going with that zoo analogy, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, totally.
Let's be realistic. Yeah, the military's not going away anytime soon, and probably neither is war. So it's good that these people do what they do. But personally, I'd rather see more money going into a peaceful solution.
So I don't know how you are about sharing things in progress, but I was going to ask if there are things in progress.
Oh, something has just very, very recently come into fruition. It's underway, it's larval right now. Like, I, so I'm, But there is happily something underway, because I was beginning to wonder if, you know, this was it.
It's schnauzers, right?
I'd use it. It's schnauzers. Schnauzer. The curious life of a dog with wiry hair.
Well, listen, Mary Roach, it was a delight to chat with you. I think my face is turning bright red for no particular reason right now. It's all the cranberry juice, yes.
It's from the cranberry juice,
yeah. I totally needed this interview to end the week. Thank you so much.
Oh, you are so welcome. Thank you so much. I very much enjoyed it.
Award-winning science writer Mary Roach is the author of 7 books, including Stiff, Gulp, and her latest, Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War.
She'll be in Milwaukee next Thursday to speak at the Milwaukee Public Museum's Science on Tap lecture series. You'll find more information about that series and how to attend at wuwm.com.